All right, law students, buckle up. Today, we're diving into a case where a simple touch, it wasn't so simple.
Yeah, really spiraled out of control.
It ended up at the Idaho Supreme Court. And this seemingly small thing ended up unraveling a whole bunch of legal issues.
Yeah, it really got complicated.
We're talking about White v. University of Idaho, and we're going to dig deep into battery law and, you know, how it all gets tangled up with governmental immunity.
Exactly. And the big question here, the one that the White case really forces us to confront, is what exactly does it take for something to be considered battery in Idaho?
Right. Like, where's the line? Is it just the intent to touch someone, or do you have to prove they actually wanted to cause harm?
And that distinction, that little nuance right there, ends up having huge implications, especially when you're talking about cases against the government.
So today we're going to break this whole thing down piece by piece, using the court opinions and legal analysis to figure out how Idaho defines battery. And to do that, we need to start with the story itself, the facts of the case.
Absolutely. The story takes place at the home of Carol and Kenneth White. They had a guest over, a professor from the University of Idaho named Richard Nair.
And, you know, just a casual social gathering.
Mrs. White was at a counter, you know, working on a resume for the university's music department newsletter. And this is where things get interesting.
Professor Nahor comes up to Mrs. White from behind and touches her back, right?
He does. He uses both hands, sort of mimicking the motion a pianist makes when playing the piano.
Yeah. You know,
striking and lifting their fingers from the keys.
So not a pat on the back, not a hug, really specific kind of touch.
More like a demonstration almost.
And this seemingly innocuous gesture leads to a whole cascade of problems for Mrs. White.
She ends up suffering some really serious injuries. Doctors diagnose her with thoracic outlet syndrome, which eventually leads to her having a rib removed and dealing with ongoing nerve damage.
Wow. Just from that one touch, it really makes you realize how fragile the body can be, you know?
Yeah, you never know what might trigger a serious medical issue. So the touch itself seemed light, and yet it resulted in these really serious, unforeseen consequences.
And I imagine this whole situation left Mrs. White feeling pretty shocked and violated.
Yeah. Definitely. So on one hand, you have Professor Nahor claiming he never meant any harm. He was just trying to show what a pianist's hand movements look like.
And on the other hand, you have Mrs. White, who's dealing with these severe injuries from a touch she never asked for and obviously found offensive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that brings us to the central question. Does this meet the legal definition of battery in Idaho?
Okay, so we have this incident, this touch that leads to all these legal ramifications. The case ends up in front of the Idaho Supreme Court. So walk us through how this happened. How did this seemingly simple case escalate to the highest court in the state?
So the Whites, they file a lawsuit in district court against both Professor Nahor and the University of Idaho.
Makes sense.
But then the university files a motion for summary judgment.
Okay, so they're basically saying, even if everything Mrs. White says is true, we're not liable.
Exactly. And their argument hinges on the Idaho Tort Claims Act. Or ITCA for short.
Ah, the ITCA. It's like a shield for government entities.
It generally protects them from lawsuits, unless a very specific exception applies.
So the district court grants the university's motion for summary judgment.
They do. They basically decide that even if the touch was battery, the university's covered by the ITCA.
So they didn't even really decide if it was battery or not. They just said the university was immune anyway.
Pretty much. And then the Whites appeal that decision to the Idaho Court of Appeals, but the appellate court upholds the lower court's ruling.
Wow, so it's like they never even got to argue the heart of the matter.
Right, which is why this case ends up in the hands of the Idaho Supreme Court. They recognize that this case presented a really crucial question about Idaho law.
And that question is, what level of intent is needed for something to be considered battery in Idaho?
Yeah. Is it enough to just prove that the person intended to make contact? Or do you need to show they intended to harm or offend the other person?
Which, when you think about it, is a pretty big deal, right? Especially when you've got a big institution like a university involved.
Huge implications. Mm. And the Idaho Supreme Court, they came down pretty firmly on the side of the single intent standard.
Single intent. Can you break that down for us? What does that actually mean?
Sure. Basically, under the single intent standard, an act is considered battery if the person doing the touching intended to make contact, and that contact wasn't allowed or consensual.
So it doesn't matter if they were trying to be mean or cause harm?
Not under this standard. The mere fact that they meant to touch the person and that touch wasn't okay is enough.
Ah, that's interesting. So was this a totally new interpretation of the law, or were there previous cases that kind of set the stage for this decision?
The Idaho Supreme Court definitely looked back at their own precedents. Specifically, they relied heavily on two previous cases, Rashbick v. Nationwide Mutual Insurance Co. and Doe v. Durchie.
And what did those cases say about intent and battery?
Well, especially the Rashbick case, it made it pretty clear that when we talk about intent in battery cases, we're talking about the intent to do the touching, not necessarily the intent to cause a specific outcome.
So it was already established that intentionally touching someone without consent was basically battery in Idaho.
Yeah, and the White Court basically said, look, we're just following what we've already said in these past cases. In fact, they even quoted the approved jury instruction from the Rashbick case.
What did the instruction say?
It said, intent to do the act complained of is enough for battery. And in the White case, the act they were complaining about was Professor Nahir touching Mrs. White's back. Since he admitted he meant to do that, well, there you have it, battery.
Okay, so the single intent standard, it's not new, but how does this all tie back to the university's immunity?
Right, so remember the ITCA, the Idaho Tort Claims Act?
Yeah, the government's shield.
Exactly, so it protects government entities, but it has exceptions.
And one of those exceptions is battery. Right, so the court decides, based on the single intent standard, Professor Nahir committed battery. And because of that battery exception in the ITCA, the university gets immunity.
So even though his touch was considered battery, it actually ends up protecting the university.
Yeah, it's kind of a twist, right? Mm-hmm. You might think that it would be the opposite. Like if it was a really bad, harmful battery, maybe then they wouldn't get immunity.
Right, that makes sense.
But the way the law is written, it doesn't matter how bad the battery was, just that it happened.
Interesting. Now, I know that there was a dissenting opinion in this case. What did Justice Bisslein have to say about all this?
Justice Bisslein, he was concerned about the implications of this ruling. He argued that battery has always required some element of force, you know, something willful or violent.
So he thought the majority's interpretation was too broad.
Yeah, he was worried that under this single intent standard, any touch at all, even a super minor one, could end up being called battery and leading to government immunity.
Yeah, I see his point. Like if someone bumps into you accidentally in a government building, is that suddenly battery?
Exactly. And Justice Bisslein felt strongly that the lawmakers who wrote the ITCA, they probably meant for the battery exception to only apply to those more serious, harmful kinds of contact.
Okay, so you've got the majority sticking to the single intent standard based on past cases, and you've got the dissent raising some really valid concerns about how far that standard could stretch. So for our listeners, the law students out there, what's the main takeaway from all this? What's the test for battery in Idaho after White v. University of Idaho?
Well, after White, it boils down to a two-part test.
Yeah.
One, did the person intend to touch the other person? Two, was that touch unwanted? If the answer to both questions is yes, then it's battery, even if there was no intention to actually hurt the person.
So for people suing the government in Idaho, what does this all mean? How does this affect their cases?
It means that if a government employee intentionally touches someone without their permission, even in a seemingly harmless way, that could be enough to trigger the battery exception in the ITCA.
And that means the government entity, like the university in this case, gets immunity.
Right. So if you're a plaintiff in one of these cases, your focus has to shift. It's less about proving that the employee was trying to be malicious.
Because that doesn't really matter under single intent.
Instead, you have to really focus on proving that the touch was absolutely unwanted. That becomes the key factor.
Okay, so White v. University of Idaho, it basically cements the single intent approach to battery in Idaho. But is Idaho an outlier here? Do other states see it the same way?
Not necessarily. Some jurisdictions use a dual intent standard for battery.
Dual intent? That sounds more complicated.
It means you have to prove both that the person intended to touch the other person and that they intended that touch to be harmful or offensive. So a higher bar for the plaintiff.
Ah, okay. But in Idaho, it's just the intent to touch, period. So to wrap things up for our listeners, what's the big takeaway?
I think the biggest takeaway here is that in Idaho, it doesn't matter if you meant to cause harm. If you touch someone without their consent, it could be considered battery.
Mm-hmm.
And that could have some surprising legal consequences, especially when it comes to governmental immunity.
Exactly. And it really makes you think, right, this single intent standard. Is it ultimately protecting people from unwanted contact, or is it giving the government too much leeway to avoid responsibility? Something for all you aspiring legal eagles to ponder.
Yeah, definitely worth thinking about. Because this case really highlights the tricky balance between protecting individual rights and protecting government entities from lawsuits.
And that's what makes it so fascinating, isn't it? The way the law tries to navigate these complicated issues, the gray areas where things aren't always so black and white.
Absolutely. And that's exactly why we love to delve into these cases and explore these nuances with you all.
All right, everyone. That's a wrap on this deep dive. Keep those legal brains churning.
And until next time, happy lawyering.